Is this the best time to sell the idea that Uncle Sam is here to help with your data?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. At the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas today, the government is set to make an appearance. Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker is promoting the department's Open for Business agenda. It's focused on trade, investment, innovation, and data. But given all the tough questions about the NSA and spying these days, how warm of a welcome will the government get? Sally Herships has more.
Poor Commerce Department. Try explaining to the techies at the Consumer Electronics Show that even though you work with the government, you are not responsible for the NSA.
If I'm there and I'm selling routers or any other communications equipment, I won't want anyone from Washington standing near my booth.
Daniel Castro is with the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. He says the anti-Washington mood is unfortunate because the Commerce Department's policies are in sync with Silicon Valley, like increasing the availability of skilled workers and supporting research and development. David Rogers is a professor at Columbia Business School. He says the NSA is jinxing American tech companies. The United Arab Emirates was set to spend hundreds of millions on a new satellite.
They put the deal on hold because they discovered there were some American computer parts in the satellites, which seemed to raise the threat that basically the data would be accessible to the NSA.
Daniel Castro estimates security concerns could cost U.S. cloud computing companies up to $35 billion over the next 3 years. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Hedge funds, those fancy investment vehicles for higher net worth investors, lagged the plain vanilla way to invest in the stock market last year. According to numbers crunched by Bloomberg News, hedge funds returned 7.4% last year compared to the S&P 500 index, which rose nearly 30%. You might say, well, that's 1 year, but the analysis shows that hedge funds in the aggregate underperformed the wider market for 5 years straight. 50 years ago today, President Johnson declared what he dubbed the War on Poverty. It was about targeted federal funds to alleviate what was then a 19% poverty rate. As part of our coverage this morning, our Wealth and Poverty Desk checked in with communities around the country asking about the state of that war.
We need to wage a war on poverty. In theory, it sounds like a good idea.
I mean, it's just incredible that they expect people to live on the wages that people are earning these days.
Right now, we have no middle class, and we only have an upper class and a lower class, and that is a very unstable economic system. And the one thing that made America great was having a middle class.
War on poverty is kind of dramatic and counterproductive.
I think all these wars on poverty and drugs and all that is a completely wrong attitude, because we've lost those wars before they even start.
The most important factor, in my mind, for getting people out of poverty is providing an opportunity for great education for children.
Well, because if you're educated, you will realize that whatever issues are occurring in your life, you can move forward.
I think they definitely do need to wage a new all-out assault on poverty itself. Yes, they do.
Some 2014 views on the war on poverty declared by LBJ a half century ago today. Want to see Marketplace live? You can enter to win a chance to join us at the Norse Theater in San Francisco on January 28th as we discuss the new era of philanthropy. Details and rules at marketplace.org/trip. There's a popular saying in California's Silicon Valley that having a failed company on the resume can be a badge of honor. But in economic terms, how does that actually play out? To get some insight into what it is about the tech industry that makes failing okay, Marketplace's Chrissy Clark introduces us to someone who's already earned her failure badge.
Danielle Morrill is a 28-year-old web entrepreneur who lives in San Francisco. A few years ago, she started a company called Referly. It paid people to write reviews about products they loved. It was her first try at building a business, and
my first, like, major fail.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I guess apparently that's going to help me in Silicon Valley, so I guess I should celebrate.
And in a way, she has. She used this music as the soundtrack to the blog post she wrote last spring, announcing that 6 months after she'd raised more than $1 million for Referly, it had failed.
My greatest fear as a startup founder isn't to fail,
she wrote in the post.
It's to become a zombie startup.
By this, she meant a company that's still operating, but has so little traction, it should be dead. When she made this announcement,
the response was huge.
Thousands of comments across the internet saying she was courageous, inspiring.
It's the highest traffic post I ever wrote.
In every other industry, you're actually really worried about your next job. But in our industry, people are glamorizing failure.
Josh Felser is a Silicon Valley investor and founded a couple very successful startups of his own. He says, sure, there are times you need to let go. But as a VC, it's his money that's on the line. And he wants to invest in people who are terrified of failing.
It should be like going to war. You want it to be bad enough and painful enough that you're only going to fail if it's the only option you have.
But you could argue the cavalier attitude toward failure in Silicon Valley that drives a venture capitalist like Felser mad is actually fueled by the venture capital game. When the aim is to win big, anything less than spectacular success can be tempting to bail on. In Danielle Morrill's case, that company she pronounced a failure, it was actually doing okay by the standards of many small businesses. A growing customer base, starting to make a little money.
But it was never really going to take off. And I certainly believe that when we raised money, the implied promise was that we would build a highly scaling, high-growth, venture-backed startup.
Morrill still has some investor money left. She's using it to fund a new startup and pay rent on the home office she and her two co-founders share in a penthouse apartment in one of San Francisco's newest skyscrapers. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
Marketplace's wealth and poverty team also interviewed the guy who started Game Crush. That's a company that's been described as part social network, part online dating site with a lot of Grand Theft Auto mixed in. He describes failing in Silicon Valley as, quote, being a movie star for a year, then roofing houses. That Q&A is at marketplace.org if you're interested. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.